This meeting is being recorded.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight in this unusual format, in this unusual year, to discuss a topic that is painful, a topic that emphasizes our frustration this year. One of the things we've wanted most over these past few days as we pray for healing and we pray for solutions for the world and for the Jewish people, for those near and far, one of the issues so much on our mind is our strong desire to be together, to be able to observe Pesach, to be able to have our Seder with family members, with parents, with children, with relatives, with friends, with those who need a place to go. It's what we want most, in a sense. And we have a cruel irony that's inserted into our Seder, that while we had asked permission, we consulted doctors and we consulted rabbis, and we said, maybe it'll be okay, maybe there's a way we can work it out. And we found that it just wasn't safe, it just wasn't possible, and we're at home without the guests we would want to have. And yet, we have to declare, in the middle of the Seder, call this Yisrael, whoever wants, whoever's hungry, come and join. As if we could let them in. As if it was true. And it's a cruel irony here we wish we could have. We did everything we could to try to make it possible, and it just doesn't work. And yet, we have to say these words nonetheless. Everyone who wants, come, join us. As if we could really back it up. And it's even prompted the question, maybe we should leave it out. Maybe it's hypocrisy or some degree of falsehood. Maybe we shouldn't say something that there's no chance we're able to back up. And indeed, this is one of the questions that was asked to Rav Herschel Schechter over these past few days, if you've been keeping up with the tremendous stream of responsive halachic rulings that he's issued every day of this crisis. So one of them was just this question that maybe we should say that this year, in the Haggadah, we shouldn't recite Kol Dich V'Yesev Yech. We don't mean it. We're not really going to have you over. And maybe we shouldn't say it. And he rules, not surprisingly, that we should say it anyway, that it's really there as a zecher. It's really there as a commemoration of something in the past. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something we're going to act on. And in making that point, so he notes that the truth is this irony or this apparent falsehood is not new. That even though this year there is a particular challenge and a particular pain involved in the formulation, the fact is when we say it every other year, then we were serious. Then we meant it. We've already started the meal. Our doors are locked. Anyone who's going to come who we really would like to has already gotten the message, has already been invited. They can't hear us talking inside our dining room. Was it meaningful all the other years? Every time before this, when we said, everyone come, whoever wants, come and join us, did we mean it then? So maybe this year isn't even that different. Maybe what we're reciting here, as painful and frustrating and as ironic perhaps as it might be, maybe on some level it doesn't necessarily have such a different quality than all the other years, and maybe we have to figure out in general, what do we mean when we say these words? And the truth is, there were some Rishonim who suggested that actually the translation is a little different than we render it today. If you look at some of the comments of the Rishonim, who've been collected in various Haggadahs, the Ritva and others, they suggest it doesn't really mean that whoever is hungry, they don't have what to eat, they should come and join us. We're talking to the people at our table who have matzah, and they have their food, but they haven't eaten all day. They've been preparing for the Seder. The Mishnah says you should prepare yourself to have an appetite, and you shouldn't eat. Okay, Kol Dichlin, all of you are hungry who haven't eaten all day, so now you get to eat, and there's nothing surprising about it. We're only talking to the people in front of us. But even those Rishonim acknowledge that somewhere in this passage, we are indeed inviting others to come and join us. We are indeed expressing our desire to be able to provide for those who don't have a meal. So one way or another, there is something that we have to figure out. What exactly do we mean when we say these words? And there are those who suggest that maybe it isn't necessarily directed at tzedakah per se, or it's not meant to be an invitation in that moment. In the Sefer Chavetzelos HaShar, it's a very widely appreciated Sefer Al HaTorah of many volumes, and he has a much thinner volume of a Haggadah. And there he offers the suggestion that maybe this is a expression of Malchus, that this is how we express majesty, that we're saying that, look, we're here, we have so much food, we have leftovers. Whoever wants should come and join us because we have more than enough. And what we're really expressing is about how prepared we are. We're not necessarily expecting anyone to come over. It's really just a way of acting in a fashion of Malchus. But then he goes on to acknowledge also that it is still most likely an invitation to those who need. And he suggests that Pesach, because of this idea of majesty, because of this notion of trying to express Malchus, so therefore, what we do is we ask people to come to us and we focus on that maybe more than we otherwise would have focused on sending food elsewhere. We emphasize that come to our meal. We have a lot to share with you. Okay. There are many who note and many who suggest that presumably the recitation of Kol Dichvin is connected on some level to the practice of Maos Chitim. And we know that we find the very beginning of Hilchos Pesach. So Shulchan Aruch tells us, Ramah tells us, that right head among the responsibilities, or first among what we have to start thinking about a month before Pesach, we have to start worrying about Maos Chitim. We have to start worrying about gathering tzedakah, about getting together funds for those who are needy. And it's interesting to note that the Ramah brings this up right as the Shulchan Aruch says that a month before Pesach we have to start thinking about Pesach. And there are many who suggest that this is to reflect the fact that this is not only a standard stucca directive, a commandment of charity like we find everywhere else, but that there is inherent in the responsibility of Pesach that we take care of people, that we provide tzedakah, that we make sure to be there for the needy. And there are many who suggest that this is connected to the Rambam's words. The Rambam in the Laws of Yontif, as we always have an opportunity usually to mention over the course of Yontif, because the Kriyas HaTorah on the last day of Yontif, when we read from Parshas Re'eh, which either comes right after the section of tzedakah or sometimes is read with the section of tzedakah, so there we note that the Rambam's language is that when one has an obligation of Simchas Yontif, when one has to celebrate for the festival, it can't be that he celebrates just by feeding himself and his own. And if one were to do so and to not be open to the needy, if he were to close the door, again, there's that irony, if he were to close his table to others who are in need, so then that would reflect that this was never a mitzvah, that this isn't a religious obligation that he's performing. Rather, he calls it a simchas kreso. It's only a celebration of his stomach. It's only something that he's taking advantage of for his own enjoyment. But it doesn't necessarily have any religious value to it if you're not open to hosting the poor. So then the question becomes, okay, if that's the case, so then why should it only be about Pesach? This is a concept which seems to be true to every Yontif. So why should Pesach be singled out with such an idea? We should say it by other Yom Tovim as well. And there are those who suggest that, okay, but Pesach still represents a starting point in our national history. It represents a time when we actually come together as a nation, and therefore we are particularly aware of the fact that we have obligations towards the other members of the nation. And maybe indeed there are some who suggest that the truth is that we do have an obligation by every Yontif. And Pesach is just highlighted because Pesach is the beginning, and if we count the year from Nisan, so then it's the first Yontif, so we want to set a tone for every other Yontif, but we certainly do expect that that should be the theme, that that should be the idea by every Yontif, and maybe Pesach isn't really any different. And actually in the Rekeach, one of the Rishonim, he points to the Pasuk in Nehemiah in the context of Rosh Hashanah, Shulchan Manos, that you should send gifts of food, that we should send around to those who are in need. Perhaps it's not necessarily something that is unique to Pesach, it's just highlighted in the context of Pesach. And there are others who do suggest that maybe on top of this, there is a Pesach connection, that we know, for example, that the Pesach nidonim al atzvua, that Pesach, we are judged up in Shamayim, on our sustenance and what we will have for the year, and therefore it's particularly crucial if we're asking for heavenly assistance, if we're asking to have a year that will be plentiful, that will have what to eat and will have what we need, so therefore we have to display our charitable instincts, we have to show that we are ready to make proper use of it, we're ready to provide for others, and therefore perhaps there is this additional component on Pesach specifically. We're trying to call attention within ourselves and therefore as part of our judgment that we care about others and this is a part of who we are. It's interesting also that when we focus on this relationship then between the both Chitim and Kol Dichvin, so there are those who kind of flip it around. The Chachma Shlomo, for example, or Shlomo Kluger, in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, Chachma Shlomo has always got fascinating things to say. So he notes that perhaps Mos Chitim is because of Kol Dichvin, that indeed it's a problem that here we make this declaration and we don't seem to really be ready to host people, and therefore we establish that indeed we are ready to be generous and to take care of people by the fact that we have made this gift, so we have taken this opportunity to be attentive to those who are in need. The Vilna Gaon had a fascinating commentary, which many point out, that the Pasuk tells us that we are obligated to eat matzos, and then the Pasuk continues, matzos ye'ochel, that matzos should be eaten. And the Vilna Gaon suggests that therefore the Pasuk itself is telling us two things, that we have an obligation to eat matzos, and we also have an obligation to make sure that matzos can be eaten by others as well, those who may not have as easy a time acquiring the matzos. It's a part of our obligation to make sure that they have the matzos too. And he notes in that sense that the way the Pasuk is spelled, this is in Parakid Gimel, the Sefer Shmos, Pasuk Vav, that the word matzos is chaser the first time, that it's without a vav, and when it's in the sense of the Eichel, providing for others, so then the matzos is with a vav, and it's a more expansive sense, in order to suggest that maybe for ourselves we can be satisfied with a minimal shear, however we define that, without getting into that discussion right now, but for others we have a broader, more open hand, and we go even further to try to provide for those who are in need. And one could suggest that this perhaps has an aspect to it that goes beyond the tzedakah component and adds another element, that we know that so much of what we do Pesach night is towards the goal of persumei nisa, of publicizing miracles. And the Mishnah tells us in the beginning of the 10th parak of Pesachim that when it comes to the Dalad Kosos, which are the four cups of wine, which are specifically targeted towards persumei nisa, that not only do we have to drink these four cups of wine, but the Mishnah says, afilu ani halokeach min hatamchoi, that even if you have someone who's not able to provide food for himself and has to take from the soup kitchen, has to take from the public welfare, he should also make sure to take from the Dalad Kosos. And it's often interpreted to mean that there's an obligation to beg for tzedakah in order to be able to fulfill this mitzvah. But one could point out that the emphasis of the Mishnah might be the other direction, that we're not talking about the Ani's responsibility to make sure that he has Dalad Kosos, But we're talking about the tea board's responsibility to make sure that they provide these four cups of wine for everyone, to make sure that everyone has, and that's a part and parcel of the idea of Pirsumei Nisa. If we're really trying to accomplish something here, we're really trying to convey a message, so then we're not only going to worry about whether we do our part, but we want to make sure that as many people as possible are able to play their role in this message. So therefore, we want to provide dalek kosos for others as well. And the Ritva and other Rishonim suggest that it's not only about the dalek kosos, but matzah is included in this directive. So the same way, we want to make sure that we eat matzah and that we publicize the miracle through that. So too, we want to make sure that everyone around us is able to have matzah and is able to be a part of that publicizing of the miracles. So all of these are elements of Mo'os Chitim and perhaps the particular connection and relationship between Mo'os Chitim and the idea of Kol Dichvin. But it still brings us to the question that it seems funny that here we're issuing this invitation and yet it's already too late, the door is closed, we don't think anyone's going to show up at that point. And certainly this year, when we're not even able to let anyone in, it certainly seems particularly difficult that we should be stating this, and we don't really seem to be ready to back it up. And perhaps there's another aspect to be emphasized here, and this was developed in a beautiful sikh of Rucham Olshin in his Sefer on Pesach. He has beautiful svarim on the Moadim, and in one of his sikhos, so he notes the fact that Rav Shechter also notes in his Haggadah that was published last year, that the Tur comments that all of the regalim are connected to each one per one of the avos. And the exemplar for Pesach is Avram. And apparently Avram, if he represents Pesach, so we know that Avram represents the quality of chesed, the quality of giving, and therefore, Pesach and Avram go together. So Rav Olshin, in explaining this, so he notes that the Chafetz Chaim, in his Sefer Avot Chesed, so he quotes Tana de Be'er Elio, where he explains what is the particular relationship of Chesed and Pesach, and he notes that there was a recognition that the Jews had during the time of their Shibud, when they saw that things were getting worse, and they saw that it was going to be a very difficult period for them, that they made a commitment that whatever they had, they would make sure that others were able to benefit. To whatever extent they could provide for themselves, they would work to provide for others. And they made sure that that was a part of their mindset and a part of their attitude going into this long Shiva, that they were going to be there for each other. And it's that chus, it's that mesiras nefesh, as he notes that the Talmud says in Maseches Brachos that miracles happen because of mesiras nefesh, because we push ourselves, because we go further than we're otherwise able to go. So because of the mesiras nefesh of the chesed of the Jews in the Mitzrayim, so that's what enabled them to make it through the Shiva and to come out on the other end. So when we say Kol Dichvin Yesu V'Yecho, so we're not necessarily at that point issuing an invitation. But yes, we certainly want to be able to host. But the recitation in that context of Halach Ma'anya D'Achalu Avosana, when we talk about how our ancestors ate this meager bread, suggests that maybe that's the reference, that they had only a little bit of bread to eat because whatever they had, they shared, they made sure to provide for others. And it's that chesed, it's that nida that took them through. So we, as the Shechta said, as Zecher, we remember that because we recognize that this is what we need in order to be able to make it through, to be able to recognize that through these darkest times, we are there for each other, we are all connected, and whatever we have for ourselves, we're going to try to provide for others. And of course, this year, it still rings painfully, it's still ironic, because we wish we could have others sitting at our table literally, and we're prohibited from doing so, we're stopped from doing so, but that doesn't mean that the mentality of trying to find every possible way, whatever it is we can do to be there for others, it doesn't mean that we're absolved from that. It means that we have to work harder. as so many of us, it's been such a wonderful thing to see, so many of us indeed are doing so, are working above and beyond to try to find every possible path to be able to connect, even when they can't have others at the table. And I've had so many conversations with members of our community over these past days. And we have such a wonderful planning committee and events committee, so many who are devoted to try to find, what can I do if I can't have people at my table, if we can't get together socially? How can I be there to connect with each other? How can I make sure to be helpful? And it's striking when we think about the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, this one of the major sources for the obligation of chesed, that we should love others as we love ourselves. So the Rambam has an interpretation that other Rishonim found difficult. The Rambam understands, as Mishneh Torah, that the obligation of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha is indeed to provide positively for others, the obligation of chesed. And there are some Rishonim who found it difficult because they said, how could that be? How could we be told that we have to do something to the same degree as we do for ourselves, kamocha, v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha? How could that require a positive action? Because if you're saying we should provide for others the same way that we are providing for ourselves, it's physically impossible to do that for even one other person, let alone everybody. You can't say, okay, I work to provide for my family, I should also work to provide for everyone else's family. That can't be. It's physically impossible. Nobody could do that for even one other person, let alone for everyone else. So some understand that we have to interpret it maybe negatively, that maybe it means, as it's phrased by Hillel in the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yomi, right about now, coming up, the idea that we say, that which is bad for you, that which you hate, so you shouldn't do that to others, a more negative formulation, because okay, that we could do. So as much as I don't want something, so then I won't do that for someone else. But how could I be expected to provide positively for others to the same degree as I could do for myself? But nonetheless, that's indeed what the Rambam says. The Rambam understands it as a positive obligation. And among the theories of what that could mean, how could that be positive, how could that be possible, is that he means to say that as much as you want for yourself, that I can't practically provide for others to the same degree as I do for myself. That's physically impossible. But I can want it for you as much as I want it for me. So how do you see that? So yes, you see that I won't stop you, I won't get in your way, I won't try to hurt you from getting that which you want. So that's the negative formulation. But also, whenever there's a possibility, I'll take that possibility. So yes, it's only going to be limited possibility. I can't provide for even one other person to the same degree as I provide for myself. But I can show that I want to by taking every opportunity. So that's a part of the mindset that we have now also, that we're very limited in some of the more conventional expressions of chesed, but we show that we want to by taking every other opportunity, and we want to so much we create other opportunities also. And in essence, that's similar to what the Chachma Shlomo said, that we have to be able to say honestly when we say Kol Dichtzin, that we know that we've displayed that we're the kind of people who would mean it, that if someone were to show up right now, we would welcome them because we've taken every other opportunity, and we have shown that this is something that is inherent in our mindset and in our personality. And with that, it's worth maybe also reflecting on a few more lessons that also emerge from this specific placement here in the Haggadah, the idea of Kol Dichtzin and what it's meant to teach us. There are a few other observations that you can find which can also be incorporated into our mindsets and can also be brought with us now and going further. So, for example, the Ramah in Hilchos Pesach in Tafai and Tess writes that at the Seder, the Balabas should bench. The head of the household, he should bench because of the idea of Tov Ayin Yivarach, that there's a bracha associated with generosity. And here he says, Kol Dichtzin, he welcomes everybody to his table, so he's generous. So therefore, it makes sense that he should be the one to bench. So Baruch Kovarsky in the Sefer Bad Kodesh So yes, it's hard to understand because normally the din is, it's actually a Gemara that God willing we'll get to in our Thursday night Gemara share soon, a Gemara in Parak Shlosha Sha'aflu. The Gemara says that normally Areach is Mevarech, that normally the guest should bench under regular circumstances. So if that's the case, so in those situations, clearly you have the guest at your table, you're already hosting somebody, and yet you're supposed to ask him to bench. So why is the Seder different? So Seder, he says, kol d'ifrin, and in his other context, he also has a guest at his table, and that's why he's asking the guest to bench. So how come the Seder should be different? And he suggests that the attitude of kol d'ifrin is not just reactive. It's not just that you happen to have somebody at your table, but like Avraham Avinu, and we find that Chazal contrasts even Avraham Avinu and others, Eov, who were responsive, but Avraham Avinu sought out opportunities, looked to try to find how can I be a Baal Chesed above and beyond what's in front of me. So to take that midah of Avraham, which is connected to Pesach, Avraham and Pesach, and to say, I'm not only looking to host somebody happen to show up at my door, but I'm asking where can I find ways and opportunities to be helpful. That is what gives the Baal Bas at the Seder night a more exalted status than he normally would have, even when he's normally hospitable. And it happens to be inherent in the theme of Pesach that Chazal tell us that we have the obligation to make sure that Pesach is always in the spring, and that's why we have a whole leap year system, and I'm sure you saw so many were suggesting maybe we could have convened and created a leap year this year. We needed to push Pesach a month down the line. And the idea of a leap year is built into the system of the calendar, specifically because of Pesach, Shemores, Chodesh, Ha'aviv, the Torah tells us that we have an obligation to make sure that Pesach is always in the springtime. And Chazal say that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us, Ru'u Chesed, Shekamalcham, see the kindness that I did for you, that I took you out of Mitzrayim at a nice time of year, in the springtime, when it's not too hot, it's not too cold. This has to be remembered forever as part of Pesach. And Rosh Yeshiva commented, is that really what we care about? That if we finally get saved out of so many centuries of slavery, so we really care about the weather, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, that's really what it's about. And he explained that yes, it's about that in order to show us that Chesed is not only reactive, it's not only Rachmanis, it's not only when you see somebody in front of you suffering and you just can't take it anymore, so you do something, but it's this proactive effort to try to find more ways in which you can be helpful and to try to see how can I make a difference even in ways that are not so obvious, that are not banging down at my door. And that midah is embedded in our observance of Pesach. It always has to be in the springtime in order to make that point. So said the Bar Kodesh, that's why the Baal Bas, the Seder night, he has this chus of generosity more so than he has all of his other hospitable events throughout the year, because he makes this declaration called Yiflin, because he says, I want to go beyond what's in front of me and see how can I be more helpful. And this year especially, where we have to really be even more creative, and we have to really look even harder to try to find how we can make a difference, that Chesed expresses itself in an additional way. And they saw an interesting interpretation, another aspect that I think we could learn from. There was a great Talmud Chacham in Bnei Brak, Rishraya Dablitsky, who passed away passed away a little while ago, and he was a big tzaddik, and they published a Haggadah of some of his thoughts, and he had an interesting component here, which is also important for us to understand, is also part and parcel of what we mean when we talk about Chesed. So there he notes that maybe we have the breaking of the matzah, and we say, kol dichvid yesev yechol, because maybe we're afraid that whoever is at our table already, and if there is a needy person at our table, that maybe he'll get the wrong idea. He sees us breaking up the matzah and hiding away parts of it and putting it here and putting it there. So maybe he thinks that we're stingy, that we're not really interested in sharing the food. We have it here, but we're going to put it away and we're going to hide it. And maybe for a minute, maybe for a second, he's going to think that he's not going to have anything to eat. So right away we say, no, this doesn't affect you. Kol dichvid yesev yechol, that you're going to eat also. And it's a fascinating idea because it reflects the fact that even a moment of chalishus hadas, even a little bit of the Ani thinking, maybe there's not anything for me here, maybe I'm not going to be able to be provided for, that we want to avoid, even though we would have fed him one way or another, but we also want to avoid that feeling of Chalisha Sadat. And it's a fascinating insight, I think, as far as the responsibilities of Chesed, and it's evocative. I had a very holy aunt who passed away about 3 years ago, Rabbi Sengoldi Fendel, Shalom, and she was the queen of hospitality, of Hafnosis Orchim, and I remember one lesson that I learned from her that sticks in from so many years ago. When I was learning in Israel, they were living, my aunt and uncle, in Harnof at the time, and they were kind of my home away from home, and I would be there all the time, and they would also have so many other guests showing up all the time. And I remember one Shabbos morning, we were there at the table, and we were awaiting the more temporary guests, the people who were just coming for lunch, and we were spread out around the table. And my aunt said that we shouldn't spread out around the table, because the guests will come while we're sitting there, and it's going to look like the whole table is full. They're not going to realize that there are enough seats for them also, because we had spread out without trying to save any space. And for a second, when they come in, they'll have a chalisha sadat. For a second, they'll think that they're not welcome here. They'll think that there isn't any space, so we should make sure to make it clear they're empty seats, so no one should think even for a second when they come in that there isn't that space open. And that's, I think, very similar to what Rav Zabudsky is saying here, that the idea is that we have to also, as part of our chesed, not only provide, but also make sure that we're providing on an emotional level, that there shouldn't even be a moment of doubt, there shouldn't even be a concern that maybe I'm not welcome here. I saw a more elaborate formulation in the Sefer Lahoris Nassan, oh God, I'm a very big admirer of the Tshuvas of Rav Nassan Gestetner, and also about last year or two, they published a Haggadah from his writings, and he has a more elaborate version, and this reminds me of a lesson I heard from my father, Zichron Levach, my aunt's brother. He always would mention Friday night when we sang Shalom Aleichem that there was an interesting ruling of the Chafetz Chaim that many understand as a reference specifically when you have needy people at the table, that maybe you should sing Shalom Aleichem later. Because the Shalom Aleichem is for the angels, and the angels don't get hungry. But the needy people at your table, they get hungry. So maybe they're going to need food quicker, so we should make sure to feed them, and we should start the meal, and we'll sing Shalom Aleichem, and we'll welcome the angels later. So the Laharis Nassim quotes that idea, and he suggests that maybe at the Seder night, so we're so angelic, and we're all dressed in white, and everything, we're acting like angels. So this poor guy who comes to your table and you think, okay, maybe there's not going to be any food. Maybe there isn't going to be any gashmius here at all because they're all acting like angels. And maybe I'm going to starve. So therefore, we have to convey to him right away, don't worry, there's going to be food, and everyone who needs is going to be able to eat as angelic as we look. It's not in a fashion that means you're not going to be able to eat. And it's also interesting to note, perhaps in a somewhat similar way, so the Kajik Lavarav in his Haggadah, so he understands that the message of Halach Ma'anya is we're saying that everything that we have comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. We're only able to eat it all because God provides for us. And then he says that's also integrated with the phrasing here of Kol Dichvin, because we're conveying to the Ani that we recognize that we're only fortunate because of the grace of God that we have more than you do. But we're not entitled any more than you are, and therefore you shouldn't feel uncomfortable that the same way, so you are here and you're going to eat, so we're here, we're going to eat in the same way, and there shouldn't be any sense that you are in any way inferior, and that's also important to convey. And it's interesting, I saw a similar insight that my cousin Rabbi Ari Marcus is a son-in-law of the aunt that I was just mentioning with this point of trying to make sure that your guests don't have a moment of Chalisha Sadat. So he is the author of Haggadah, Haggadah Called From Despair to Destiny, and he makes a similar point as the Kaddish Baruch Hu, that we're trying to convey that this is all because the Kaddish Baruch Hu provides, and therefore we're all equal here. You shouldn't feel like you are getting charity from us. This is part of the message that the Kaddish Baruch Hu provides for us, and that's why we eat, and that's why you eat as well. And the Laharis Nassim, to mention him again in Haggadah, he has a lot to say about this point of Kol Dichvin and Halach Ma'anya. And he also suggests that this is, again, in order to address the emotional components of the Anis at the table, and to say, listen, look at our whole history, Halach Ma'aniya, that we also, as a nation, we all knew poverty, we all knew want at some point, and yet we have prevailed, and yet here we are in a much more luxurious setting. And he writes that that is a double nechama, that's a double comfort to those who are at your table who may be more in need, because saying, first of all, we understand, we know where you're coming from, we've been there, and also that we say that, God willing, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, there's a light at the end of the tunnel for you as well. And therefore, perhaps that is itself very much a part of the message of this year that we are looking to remind all of us, to remind ourselves and remind those around us that we've had a difficult history, but there's always been a light at the end of the tunnel, and so too there's a light at the end of the tunnel here as well, and we are all in this together, and because of our recognition of that, that's why, God willing, we can anticipate a light at the end of the tunnel. And my distinguished colleague, Rabbi Yo Baruch Shulman Shlita, in his Haggadah Yisam Lachad, so he has a nice idea there as well, where he suggests that, a little more of an elaborate way, that the relationship of Kol Dichtein here in Halach Ma'aniya, here in talking about our history, is to remind us that the redemption has always started because individuals took on the needs of others, because Moshe Rabbeinu, who didn't need to worry about anybody else, who was living a life of luxury in the king's palace, because he went out to Yarbus of Losim and he saw what was going on and he saw how people were suffering and he dedicated himself to that. That was the beginning of the Geula. So too, we integrate into our Seder. We say that because we're able to be aware of the needs of others, because we can say or we can think Kol Dichtein, so that is what is going to bring us further on the path of the Geula. And again, perhaps this year, that takes on additional, more complex meanings, but it is no less true. And just to say one more thought, that perhaps one additional aspect that can be contained in the idea of reciting Kol Dichtein, even if it isn't 100% practical, and even if in previous years it's also not 100% practical or realistic to expect that guests are coming, is perhaps a recognition of the fact that the Seder night is first and foremost about chinuch, about transmitting a message to our children about educational components that we are trying to convey. And if we think about this connection between Avraham Avinu and Pesach and the idea that this exemplar of chesed is connected to the theme of Pesach, so we find in the beginning of Parshas Vayera that when the Torah tells us about Avram's hospitality to, it turned out to be angels, all of the great lengths that he went to. So on the one hand, he does so much himself. He exerts himself. He was recovering from his surgery then, his bris milah, yet he exerts himself to personally attend to the needs of his guests. And yet, in the middle of the story, we find that some of it he asks Yishmael to take care of. He asks the Nar, he asks Yishmael, his son, to get the water. And a little bit of a discussion why that is, you know, why is he farming out some of it, why doesn't he do that himself also? I believe Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his commentary to the Chumash, he suggests that this was for the sake of chinuch, that he had to make sure that his children were also involved in what was happening, because they have to appreciate that that is their legacy, that is essentially the mission that Avraham Avinu is transmitting to his descendants. The Torah says right after that, that's why he's selected, because he's going to make sure to teach his household to embody this quality of chesed. So therefore, the chinuch is important, that even if the actual providing for others happens off stage, and even if where you have done your providing is through the most chitim that was before Pesach, and there isn't anyone who's actually going to come now, it's crucial that your children hear you say this, that those around you understand that this is the value system, that this is what we're all about. And it could also align with the idea that's a possibility that Avram, at that point, he already knew that his guests were angels who didn't actually have any physical needs. It didn't really matter what food you brought for them. They didn't really need food. But he was going through this because of the chinuch. He wanted to make sure that his son would see what he was doing and what he's all about. And that's such a crucial part of the message. I know as a child, my father used to take me on Bikur Cholim missions. He used to take me to the hospital. And now when we're forced to try to find other ways to fulfill Bikur Cholim, the impact of that lesson, it sticks with you. The message is still a part of you, that this is built into who we are, into how we see the world. And therefore, we're going to find the way, even if the traditional routes are closed off to us. So it's our hope that in this year of frustration, in this year of challenge, when there's so much that's so difficult, and even our chesed is being taken away from us, even our ability to have people at the table, even our ability to be with family, to be with extended family, to be with grandparents, to be with grandchildren, what we would so much take for granted. This is who we are. This is what we do. And yet we're prevented from doing that. We know that Klal Yisrael is resilient, that Klal Yisrael is committed to this midah in the most profound, in the deepest way. It defines who we are. And because halach ma'aniya de'achalu avasana, because we remember that in the Sheba, like the Tana de Be'elio tells us, that when things were dark, we said we're going to find a way to make a little bit of bread go a long way. We're going to find a way to do the impossible. We're going to find a way to make sure that the nothing that we have is somehow able to provide for others. That's why there is a gula. Because like Moshe Rabbeinu, walking out and sharing the suffering of those who had less than him, who he wasn't necessarily experiencing their experience. Because of that, that's why there's a geula. Because of Avraham Avinu, who made sure to teach his children that this is who we are, whether or not it's needed right now, whether or not there's actually an opportunity right now, because he made sure to make that his motto and his legacy, that's why there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And our hope this Pesach and this Chodesh HaGeula is that we can take all of these values and that we can take all of these lessons of all of our ancestors and all of the legacy that defines who the Jewish people are, and that we will find a way to give it expression, and no one can hold us back. No one, under all of the circumstances in history, through rags and through riches, through Shibud and Geula, through Afeila and Ora, no one has been able to hold back the chesed instinct of the Jewish people, and they're not going to be able to now. And to whatever extent we have to be creative and we have to find other pathways, that's what we're going to do. And because we continue to live that, because we continue to embody that, because we continue to make that our essence and our personality, so God willing, this month should be a Chodesh HaGeula for the world, for the Jewish people, for all of us around us, for all who are suffering, for all who are ill. And we should soon see that light at the end of the tunnel. We should soon recognize a redemption to our immediate suffering, at least to that which is in front of us. And we should have all of the opportunities to be Balei Chesed, to be able to share, to be able to give in the fullest sense of the word as soon as possible. So I wish all of you a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. I wish you all a joyous Yontif that is safe and that is healthy and that is as expressive of our most sincere values to the extent that we can. And through that, we should soon see Geula. We should soon see redemption in every sense of the word. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Thank you.